Yeah, because it is 9:01. You're a little late.
My apologies. Just couldn't resist.
Okay. I would like to call this telephonic meeting of the Arizona State Board of Optometry to order at 9:02 a.m. on April 10th. Ms. Holland, could you roll call, please?
Dr. Pythagoras?
Here.
Dr. Jones?
Present.
Dr. Moffitt?
Present.
Dr. Hunter?
Present.
Dr. Mastoides?
Present.
George Ivanov? Noted absent. Margaret Whalen?
Present.
Paula Hollins is here. Mona Baskin?
Present. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So that's it?
That concludes roll call.
Okay, perfect. Thank you all for participating today in this telephonic conference. It's not a teleconference as people are doing nowadays, thank God. You don't have to see me. But I hope everyone's safe and your families are safe in these trying times. Before we get going, I'd like to, even though it's not a live meeting, I'm still going to go over the board meeting statement of purpose, and I'll do that before we get going. A license to practice optometry in this state is a privilege granted by the Arizona Legislature through the Optometric Practice Act. In 1907, on behalf of the people of the state, the legislature created the Arizona State Board of Optometry to regulate the practice of the profession of optometry, issue licensure where appropriate, and in general assure the public that the practice of optometry will be conducted with reasonable skill and safety by persons who meet the curriculum requirements to hold a Doctor of Optometry degree from an accredited optometry school. Every time I read this, I want to say, why did they make that sentence so long? To enforce the Optometric Practice Act, the board reviews applications for licensure and complaints relative to the conduct of its licensed optometrist and is charged with determining if the provisions of the Optometric Practice Act are met. In addition, the board may promulgate rules and policies in conformity with the stated purpose of the board and the mission as mandated by law. As of January 1st, 2019, all board meetings are digitally recorded with the recordings of the audio available to the public on the board's website under the consumer information link. Thank you very much. I'd like to move on to item D. Before we go into the numerical order of the complaints, I'd like to ask Margaret if any of the doctors or patients are on the call, because if they are, we'd like to go to those first, just so they don't have to wait through everything else.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President.
Margaret?
This is Margaret Whalen. I also first would like to remind the board members, if you could please state your name before speaking, that way the record is clear since it's being recorded and also the public knows who is speaking. I would appreciate that. I do know that...
Well, this is Rick. I got to break in one more time, but this is Dr. Christakis. Before you get going, I did have on my notes under President's Report to thank you for sending out the etiquette for the teleconference, even though some of those don't apply to us because we're not teleconferencing in it, and we do have a history and, the fact that we've done this before telephonically. The only thing I would add is, just as Margaret was saying, before you speak to the doctors on the board or anyone speaking, if you could just let us know who you are, so that way we're not talking over each other and we know who's actually speaking. Thank you. Sorry, Margaret.
Thank you, Dr. Chrysagas. I do know that patient AJ is here for item 5, Joshua Roden.
Okay.
And patient CR is here for Jerry Berger.
Okay.
And
then let's,
I know that Dr. Gish and his counsel will be appearing telephonically a little bit later if they're not here already. They had a previous meeting, not Dr. Gish, but for another client, the attorney did.
Okay.
And I believe that's all that's here. Anybody else would need to identify themselves.
Perfect. Then let's, let's go to number one. As I get to the number, I'll ask you to identify yourself. But let's do number one first, since numerically there. And then we can go down to number 5, and then we can go back We get things done. So I'd like to go to number one, Jerry Berger, OD, IR number 202011. Give a summary of that, please.
Yes, the CR.
Okay, thank you. But, we're going to do a summary first, and then we'll ask you to if you have any further comments. But thank you.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Jones. I can do a quick summary of this case.
Thank you.
So it's like a patient, the complaint came from CR, who is the mother of patient CH. She states that she took daughter to her contact lens appointment. They waited about an hour and a half to see the Dr. Berger. He couldn't get her to 20/20 due to her makeup, and she said in the complaint also that he was disrespectful, and she wanted us to kind of look into that. Do you want me to go further into what he says or his response? Nope. Or?
We can, well, just due to the nature of this, we can, that gets us going. We can hear from the patient, and then we can talk about the whole, what he responded to. So if the patient would like to give their side of the story here, I'd appreciate that.
Dr. Berger is also here to respond.
Okay, good. Perfect. Thank you, doctor.
Dr. Kasalagas, members of the board, this is, this is Mona Baskin, the Assistant Attorney General. It is unclear if the patient is present or if the complainant, who was not the patient but the patient's mother. So if we can make the record clear on that, Dr. Kasalagas. Thank you.
Okay.
This is the patient's mother. My daughter lives out of town.
Thank you.
So I am speaking in her behalf. But I was with her.
Ma'am, this is Mona Baskin. Is your daughter an adult? She's an adult?
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, ma'am, if you could tell us your story.
Certainly. We came into the office and waited over an hour and a half for a scheduled office appointment before being seen with Dr. Berger. And in my presence, before he took her back in the closed room, he asked her what her profession and age was. He came, she was back there less than 10 minutes, and he came back and said, "Oh, me, not her." And she's not, she's a working, physically capable, mentally capable person. He told her he couldn't bring her vision to 20/20 due to her makeup. He was very condescending, very sexually rude, disrespectful, very chauvinistic, used vulgar language in front of five of us. Five women were in the office at the time, one of which was his, one of assistant, an associate of his. My daughter was physically shaking and crying, and she works in the legal system, so she's pretty tough. I've been with the legal system for over 14 years, so we've both seen quite a bit in our lives. And we thought, gosh, is this how you go about a practice? He told her to come back on Tuesday, which wasn't going to happen because, like I said, she was from out of town. I investigated it further, put my complaint in with the Better Business Bureau, with you, and also with Pearle Vision, and come to find out Dr. Berger was just there for the day and roamed around office to office, and the company and the woman specifically that owns several of the Pearle Visions in the state of Arizona said that they will not be hiring him again, and that we were not the only ones that had complained, that there had been previous. And my point, in fact, is if he treats a 42-year-old woman as he did my daughter, I would be suspicious of how he may treat somebody that can actually speak for themselves. So I had some real concerns, and having a criminal background just set me off even further. I don't see my daughter shake or cry and feel like she had just been abused. it was the most strange thing I've ever seen. So that pretty much summarizes it. The only other thing I have to add is I looked up Dr. Berger, and he lists himself online as being a private practitioner. And when I called the number he had listed, it was a Walmart pharmacy in Scottsdale. But if you read his bio, it makes it appear as though he's just got this really state-of-the-art practice.
Okay. Thank you very much. The excuse me?
I said thank you.
Oh, okay. I thought I heard someone say I can't hear.
Oh, no.
So,
no, thank you.
This is Dr. Kasakis again. What I'd like to do is discuss this a little further amongst ourselves, and then I'll have Dr. Berger come in, because some of the things we're going to talk about, I'm sure he's going to bring up with what he mentioned. So, Dr. Jones, did you want to go in any further now based on what you've heard, what we read, and then what Dr. Berger had said to us in his response?
No, unless you guys want me to go over his written response, I can. Otherwise, I would just rather hear what he says.
Okay. Dr. Berger?
Yes.
Would you like to give a rebuttal or your side of the story?
Yes, I would, please. Well, you can see from the information I sent to you there that we're dealing with CR, who filed the complaint for CH. And I've circled on that first page that I will deal with her complaints a little bit later in the pages I've sent to you. And then on the next page I've sent, it shows where CR is complaining for CH, who was an adult and could have handled this herself. The following page shows where information was filled out verifying that the patient was 43 years old, and that's not the case. CH was roughly 22 years old. And if we turn the page...
May I say something?
Well,
you may not. Okay.
Go ahead, Dr. Berger.
If we turn the page over to the Better Business Bureau complaint form, you'll notice, again, it was by CR, not the patient. And down at the bottom, what's your resolution? She calls me an unprofessional and creepy man, which is completely false. The next page is my letter back to Margaret, my response, telling her, thank you for the notice. However, I would like to point out that even I didn't realize at first the complaint was not made by a patient I examined, but by an individual that I did not have any contact with, let alone examine. Therefore, having made this realization or finding, after respectfully replying to the sent complaint, I request the complaint not being made by a person, let alone a person that has never been a patient of mine, I never spoke to, and was not in my presence, that it be dismissed on that basis. And then on the next page that I sent, it's the handwritten portion. Although I do not believe this complaint should be heard, I thank you for the opportunity to reveal the truth and illustrate there was correct care, no optometric wrongdoing, no violation of any part of the Optometric Practice Act. And the next page is where I deal with the complaints that were listed on the Better Business Bureau page, where it accused me of deceptive advertising. Dr. Berger is an optometric independent contractor employee of Pearle Vision, West Point Optical, and has no control or contribution of any kind to Pearle Vision's advertising or business operations, practices, or statements. There was an improper correction or fit of glasses or contact lenses. due to the unhealthy medical condition of the patient's eyes, there was no refractive correction finalized and therefore no eyeglass or contact lens prescription. Also, Dr. Berger never fits glasses. The indication there was defective or poor quality eyeglasses or contact lenses. Just as stated, there was no eyeglass or contact lens prescription at this time due to the ill health, ill medical condition of the patient's eyes. And Dr. Berger never dispenses glasses or contact lenses. Number four, the refusal to give me a copy of the prescription. Due to the severely unhealthy condition of the patient's eyes and not achieving 20/20 vision, no prescription was finalized and the patient was asked to return after several days of not wearing old, damaged, dirty contact lenses to potentially see healthier eyes and achieve clear vision and a good prescription. The next one where it says, my eyes were seriously injured. Her eyes, by her own action of long-term continuously wearing her old contact lenses, were temporarily injured from torn, dirty, old contact lenses, but proper treatment would prevent permanent injury and return to a healthy ocular condition. The optometrist failed to correct my problem. Dr. Berger perfectly listened and queried and tested the patient to gain the correct information to diagnose the patient's symptoms and problems and lay out a corrective plan. The patient refused to accept the clearly observed signs and symptoms and called Dr. Berger a liar about his observations. She refused to accept his diagnosis and treatment plan. She just wanted to buy contact lenses, put them on her damaged eyes, and go home. Further on the complainer's complaint, we waited 1.5 hours into scheduled office visit before being seen by Dr. Berger. The patient's mother commented to try to degrade me, and this is her false statement, her false comment. They may have been in the office, but not waiting on me. I was out to lunch from 12 to 1 o'clock. I had a 1 o'clock and a 1:40 patient. And CH was 2 o'clock. I took her in the room as soon as the tech gave me her prepared record, and there was no waiting at all. This is just a lie on waiting for me. In my presence, I heard him ask my doctor what her profession was and her age. The same effort by this person to make a negative comment on me is, however, not smart enough to realize an optometrist needs to know what a patient does at work so he can make sure her vision performs well so she can work comfortably. It's another effort at fostering false negative comments. When he took her back for her exam, he told her he could not bring her vision to 20/20 due to makeup. This is a lie about what I said, but it's partially correct. I could not bring her vision to 20/20, but it was due to edema and trace tannus, not makeup. I saw no makeup. He was condescending, disrespectful, and chauvinistic. All of these comments are blatantly false. Unless I waited to the 12 other patients I had that day, treated them well, and waited for C just to come so I could be disrespectful to her only. I told her to come back next Tuesday. She got this one right. I wanted to wait long enough to bring about some ocular healing and to shorten the time she had to be without contact lenses. She came out of the exam room shaking and crying, is what was said. This is big-time false and her effort at a Me Too movement. He interrupted the associate, Veronica. Correct, I wanted C to be promptly attended to and set up for her next appointment. Anyone has the right to complain or reject advice, but they do not have the right to create lies in an attempt to get even. The next page is a photocopy of the appointment screen from that day. And I have written on there, lunch from 12 to 1, I was out of the office. And then there's a 1 o'clock and a 1:40, as I've said, and then patient CH at 2 o'clock. When I returned from lunch at 12:40, she and her mom were already there trying on glasses. Her appointment was at 2 o'clock. She was over an hour and a quarter early for the 2 o'clock appointment. Dr. Berger saw his 1 o'clock appointment on time. He saw his 1:40 on time, and he was ready on time and took the 2 o'clock appointment, CH, exactly on time. She had no wait for her scheduled 2 o'clock appointment, but they came in way early and had to wait for the scheduled time. She was seen exactly on time. If the Pearle Vision tech had the courtesy or respect for the patient, she could have pointed out to the mother and daughter that they were an hour and a half early for the 2 o'clock appointment, and they may not have gotten angry and so mad at Dr. Berger, who they thought they had to wait on while he was exactly on time. Medical records. This office of Pearle Vision uses the program My Vision Express to record patient care. Dr. Berger's independent contractor service was considered a float optometrist by Brandy Haig, the district manager. Therefore, he was promised but not given a username and password to permit the use of the MVE program like all the other optometrists. Due to this discrimination of his position after the completion of patients, the tech would immediately scan his patient records into the My Vision Express program, and to my knowledge, this was done 100% of the time prior to this date. On January 6th, Monday, I received a notice of the board complaint that had been filed against me. The next day on January 7th, Tuesday, I drove to Gilbert, Arizona to get copies of the medical records from Pearle Vision for this patient. I could not believe that the tech had shredded all the records from this patient right after I had given her the records to scan into the MVE program. She even deleted the patient's name from the appointment screen. I believe that the Pearle Vision district staff tried to make it look like the patient had not come in for sales numbers that day. Because this patient and her mother raised such a stink in the office, when I was finished for the day, I wrote up additional comments to be added to the record later, and since this was on my computer, I still have the medical record narrative that I include here. And the next page is just a copy of the deleted name from 2 o'clock on that date that I picked up at my visit back to Pearle. The next page was me writing to the district manager advising her of these problem patients. It goes, Brandy, there were several women patients who exercised improper actions and behavior today and passed off falsehoods trying to make me appear a bad guy. I will tell you about this, and it might take more than one email. Today, patient came in, today wanting new contact lenses instantly. She had epithelial keratitis from overwearing contact lenses. She reported pain, discomfort, and blurred vision. She said she had been wearing torn and old contact lenses for some time. Her eyes were sore from the torn lenses. Slit lamp also showed reddened eyelid margin, mild inflammation in the cul-de-sac. I began to explain how we would treat her medical condition and get her back to normal as soon as possible. Then she began to argue with me, saying I'm wrong and her red eyes are only due to red makeup. I tried to explain that was actually what was actually wrong with her eyes, how we had to get her healed up and back to wearing contacts the right way. She actually called me a liar, and she said she knew what to do and demanded that I sell her boxes of contacts. When I told her that could not happen yet, she went ballistic in the exam room. She just wanted to buy boxes and leave. I told her I would not argue with her and treat her only the right way. Her female companion, who we know it is now, started to argue with me, but per HIPAA, I did not discuss it with her.
Did you argue with her?
I'm sorry all of this occurred, but you have my word the only true sincere medical care was conducted and the only true sincere medical treatment was prescribed. I can understand why a patient would get angry after waiting an hour plus, but this wait occurred not due to Dr. Berger, who was promptly on time, but due to the fact they came in an hour and a half early for the appointment, and the reception person for Pearl did not exercise the courteousness to let them know they were way early. The thing I didn't address back here a second ago, she did not leave the exam room crying and shaking. She left the exam room as angry as anybody could be at me because she couldn't be given boxes of lenses that minute. To finish up, I trust you'll find there was no violation of the Arizona optometry law on the part of Dr. Berger. He tried in every way to care for the patient's eyes in the appropriate manner. He had nothing to do with Pearl Vision's destruction of the medical records and the name on the appointment screen immediately after the patient left, so it would look like the patient had never been there. And that summarizes my reply. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. What I'd like to do is open this up for discussion among the board members, and I will ask Dr. Berger and the complainant to please not say things while we're talking. If we have questions for you, we will ask you and you can respond, because this can't be a free-for-all on the telephone. So if you have anything to say at the end, I will definitely give you an option to do that, but I just don't want people yelling back and forth. So for now, if the board could just discuss this, I would appreciate that. So thank you. Is there any discussion, any questions that any of you have of the doctor or the complainant?
This is Dr. Moffitt, and I have a question for Dr. Berger.
Yes.
Okay. What were the actual findings on exam? Because we don't have the records, and you give a diagnosis and you reference different findings, but if you can recall, I would like to just know what your findings were on exam.
I have sort of a pretty good recollection because of the featured circumstance here, but the pertinent part was the fact she did not have 20/20 vision. She refractively could not get 20/20 vision, and the slit lamp showed epithelial keratitis with slight pannus, conjunctival injection, cul-de-sac injection, and edema.
Edema of the cornea?
Edema of the cornea, yes.
And when you say epithelial keratitis, you mean like a punctate keratitis? Is that what you're referring to?
When I refer to this to myself, I'm referring to pannus, slight pannus, conjunctival redness, and the edema.
Okay. Edema with folds or microcystic edema?
No, just barely detectable edema.
Okay.
Of the
Do you remember what?
Yes?
Go ahead. You can finish.
Well, just edema of the thickness of the cornea itself. It wasn't severe, but it was enough to limit some 20/20 vision.
Do you remember what acuity? I know it's all recollection, which is a different thing we can get to. But do you remember what acuity level you got her to?
20/25.
Okay.
I'm sorry, and this is Dr. Moss again. Can I just, not to hammer away on the edema, but how were you able to detect edema? It was just the thickness of the cornea that you were judging, or was it something else?
With the slit lamp and the slit at the perimeter of the cornea or the limbus, and it would show hazing.
Okay.
This is Dr. Kasagas. The part of the problem here is we have an optometric conundrum, in that the doctors were damned if we do and damned if we don't, and that if you have a patient you can't correct, and you don't want to give them something, and you have them come back and let the eye heal up, if indeed they want contact lenses at the time. I've had patients get mad at me if I wouldn't refit them or wouldn't give them a prescription. But then if you do, and they happen to have a process going on that is not inherently good, then you're going to be damned if you give them a new prescription and they end up having a worse problem. So part of the problem is the fact that he did not give a prescription when, if indeed there was an unhealthy cornea, that was the prudent thing to do, in my opinion. I mean, there are other things going on here, don't get me wrong, but as far as the actual care of the patient, as far as what was done and what was asked to be done, which is merely come back again for, and again, because the patient isn't local doesn't mean that the patient should be given a contact lens prescription at the time. So I just wanted to get that out there. Any other comments?
this is Dr. Moffitt. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Jones.
Okay. Well, one of the problems that I have is that we have no records. And I'm like, did this get billed? And how is he maintaining records going to these places? I mean, that's kind of where I kind of don't understand why we don't have a record.
Well, what I thought when I was reading this, and we can have Ms. Baskin give us a determination, I view two different things going on here. Was there a violation of the Optometric Practice Act by the way he treated this patient? And there is definitely a record-keeping issue. But the record-keeping issue, I think, is solely separate from the complaint, only because of the nature of this. But I do have a question for the complainant, though. Because we don't have any records, I'm sure you know your daughter's age.
But yes, I do. And actually, she's got, I asked for a copy of the form when we signed in. Just for the record, her appointment was at 2:00, and we were there at 1:55. And yes, we were looking and trying on glasses because Dr. Berger came walking through. There were patients ahead of us, but we kind of listened and they were picking up contacts. The staff that worked there was very on edge. It was not us. We thought, okay, this is interesting, but whatever. My daughter's birth date is 12/6/77. So she's not 22, she's 42. I decided to go with her because we spent the afternoon and the morning together, and I said, sure, I'll go over there with you. But we did, I have no reason to lie, we waited 1 hour and 32 minutes because I put it on my Apple Watch. Dr. Berger never prescribed because he did come out and talk to me, said, I can't do anything for your daughter. She has to come back on Tuesday. So, well, she works, and she's not in town on Tuesday. So any recommendations that you may give me, the associate was on the phone with the associates, and I can give you that her name, but I'd like to protect her. But I've talked to Pearle Vision, and I've spoken with the woman who owns the Pearle Vision that Dr. Berger was working at. He was filling in for a pregnant woman on pregnancy leave. Anyway, if that were the case, I understood that she couldn't get contact. She understood that day. But Dr. Berger gave her no medications. He prescribed no medications topically or otherwise for her eyes, because we discussed that later. And he wanted her to come in to a different location, not the one that she had been at. He interrupted the associate who was on the phone, and he goes, fucking get off that phone, and excuse my language. He used profanity more than one time. He was obviously upset and didn't want to be there, and he said so much to me. He said, I don't effing want to be here. And I'm like, whoa, this is really not interesting. And when we checked out, they told me not to worry about pain that day, gave me a card of the woman who owns the Pearle Vision, gave me written on the card where my daughter could get a credit, Brandy Haig, and where she could get an in-store credit, her, the store manager, And then it just went from that to, like I said, my daughter is not one to get upset easily. She, nor do I feel I am. We just talking to you, it feels anxious. And I worked in a DA's office for 14 years of my life, so I kind of understand how people are. The medical portion, she was in when he did her exam. She was in behind closed doors less than 6 minutes. Maybe it was whatever confusion. I didn't hear any yelling in there. We were out still giggling when she came out the door, except just the fact that she was shaken, and it took me 10 minutes to calm her down to send her on her way. And for me, it's as much principle as it is profession. And thank you for listening.
Thank you.
So, Dr. Christakis, this is Dr. Moffitt. I guess I have a few comments, I guess, just to add to our discussion.
Okay.
There are times, and I say this for the patient's mother's behalf, there are times when we see patients that have overworn contacts or the cornea shows irritation, and that can limit the best corrected acuity achievable, and it is in the patient's best interest to treat their lenses better, replace them more frequently, and to not wear lenses and to recheck before we would prescribe a new prescription. So this scenario is valid as far as I'm concerned. I will say for Dr. Berger's behalf, some of his descriptions of the clinical findings, although we are lacking records, which I agree is an issue, some of the findings described in your response are inconsistent, and I do question that somewhat. PANIS in and of itself is not a reason not to prescribe contact lenses. Corneal edema is, but I question your response of how you were able to observe it. And lid findings also are not necessarily a reason why you would not prescribe a contact lens. I also think that some of your presentation of your defense and your word choice and attitude is obviously condescending. You've used the word lie, the Me Too movement, patient's not smart enough. It's all condescending. And so if this is how you present yourself to your patients, I can completely understand why they may have an unprofessional concern or unprofessional conduct concern about the way you treat them. I would also have a problem with that as a patient. And maybe this is where you really need to clean up when you're interacting with patients. That's the extent of my comments.
Thank you very much.
This is CR. If I could interject one other thing, the owner of these provisions.
Ma'am, this is Mona Bastian. Yeah. This is the time Dr. Christakis has stated that this is the time for the board to be asking questions of both the licensee and of you. So thank you very much, ma'am. I know this is a difficult thing for you, and it's hard because we're all on the phone, but thank you.
Of course.
And if I could also add something, not to do with the case, but I'm hearing a lot of background noise. I don't know if someone has a TV on in the background or if they're in a position where something's going on, but if you're not speaking, if you mute your phone or something, I'm just getting a lot of background noise. I don't know if anyone else is.
I hear it also. This is Dr. Moffitt.
Okay. And I don't hear anything now, so maybe that fixed it. All right, so do any other board members have any questions or anything to add? Well, sounds like Dr. Moffitt and I are having a dialogue. But no, I'm just kidding. What we need to do is assess whether there was a violation of the Optometric Practice Act based on the complaint we have here. And then, like I said, we could go into other things as we deem necessary, one of which happens to be record keeping, and the other happens to be with, we'll just, for lack of a better term, we could say communication lapses. Do I hear a motion, or is there a motion? regarding
Dr. Casagas,
the
members of the board, yeah. This is Mona Baskin. I think you need to look at the totality of the complaint and any other issues that you see in within the complaint. I think you need to look at that as a whole in making your determination. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll make a motion. So I would like to make a motion that we send a letter of concern to Dr. Burgess regarding the poor record keeping, as well as the suggestion, at least, of unprofessional conduct with his communication with his patient and staff.
Okay. Is there a second?
Am I allowed to talk? I didn't get a chance a minute ago.
But when did you try to speak?
Well, the complainant got a chance to rebut or do whatever you would call it about things, and I didn't have an opportunity.
This is Dr. Moffitt again. Dr. Berger, I'm content to listen to your response, but I will tell you that some of my concerns have to do with having heard you speak already, as well as the materials you supplied to the board and your language and the way that you described your interaction with patients and staff. So I was basing that on those things.
However,
Dr. Casagas, this is Mona Baskin. Just as a point of order, we have a motion, and we have the licensee discussing during the board's motion. So I think at this point, we either need to move forward with the motion or have the motion maker withdraw their motion, and then you can deal with these communication issues amongst the licensee and the board, how you wish to do it. But
can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question? If we continue on and we get a second of the motion, and during discussion, if he has something to add, I could ask him then, is he allowed to speak during discussion, or is that just strictly for board members because we're discussing a...
Right, you're discussing the board's motion, pardon me.
Okay.
So I think it would be best practice for the maker of the motion just to withdraw the motion should you wish to have further discussion from Dr. Berger regarding his summation. And again, members of the board, this is an initial review, so and the board has read everything. So I think as a point of order, that would be best practice, if that's the direction you want to go, Dr. Casagas.
Well, I'm only concerned with, again, not being a judiciary person as far as allowing someone the ability to respond to something that came up after they spoke. That's okay. The only thing I'm concerned with, because I don't want it to come back to haunt us. If you've got something you want to say,
okay.
I'm willing to hear it.
Dr. Moffitt. I'll recall my motion.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Now, Dr. Casagas, you may go forward.
Thank you. Dr. Berger, if you'd like to say something, but again, I don't want to hear the same thing we just went over, but if you've got some rebuttal to something that came up since the last time you spoke, I'm more than willing to listen, or we're more than willing to listen.
Okay. She said that they came into the office at 1:55, waited an hour and 32 minutes to be seen. That reflects something that's not true, and I'm sorry I used the word lie, but an intentional untruth has a different word. I also had no discussion with her of any kind, and I used no profanity at any time in my everyday life or in front of a patient or anywhere, and the medical prescription got shredded along with everything else. And that's
okay.
All I had to add. Oh, and she said the first time that I had her daughter in there for 10 minutes, and the second time she said 6 minutes. So you see, there's a real inconsistency that conflicts with the truth. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Moffitt?
I would like to make a motion to file a letter of concern regarding Dr. Berger's possible unprofessional conduct in dealing with patient and their and his staff.
And record keeping.
And record keeping. Thank you. Sorry.
Okay.
This is Mona Baskin. I think you need to be a little bit more specific regarding the record keeping. Are you saying maintaining the patient records, or I'm unclear on that? And I'm also unclear to just a blanket statement regarding unprofessional conduct. Is this, are you referring to communication with patients? And I'm just unclear.
I'm referring to the interaction between himself and the patient and surrounding staff, as well as his interaction in his defense with the board. He uses his own words, are that the patient lied, they were maligning him, this was consistent with the Me Too movement, the patient was not smart, or the patient's mother was not smart enough to understand, that this technician was discourteous and didn't show respect to the patient. There's a concern about condescension, and I felt like when Dr. Berger was speaking, I also felt like he was being somewhat condescending about his interaction with the patient and the staff at Pearl Vision. So these things taken in totality, I think, yes.
Okay. I think that we need to focus on the complaint, and I think that you need to focus on what you're finding with regarding his interaction with the patient and the mother and the staff. So I think you need to focus on that, and I think that that needs to be the focus of it, and then you need to delineate something more specific regarding what issues you have with the record keeping.
I would like to make a motion to send a letter of concern to Dr. Berger regarding the suggestion of unprofessional conduct with his communication with not only the patient and the staff, as well as a failure to provide records for review.
Thank you. This is Mona Baskin. Thank you.
Sounds
this is
good.
Dr. Jones.
We have a second?
This is Dr. Jones. I second
Thank
that.
You very much. Thank you. So we have a motion and a second. Now I'd like to discuss the motion. And I can go first. I don't have a problem with any of this. Being non-disciplinary, it's a letter of concern, but it should be an eye-opening experience for the doctor, by all means. But I wanted to go off onto the record keeping only because we can't speak later, but a doctor is responsible for those records, whether it's his office or not. It's their license that's under review, and so there has to be a way that whether it's done by you yourself or you keep written notes, there has to be a way we have records. Otherwise, you can't defend yourself either. And the other thing was the I've lost my train of thought. So if anyone else has anything to say, if it comes back, I'll bring it up again. Was there any further discussion on the motion that you want to, that anyone wants to bring up? Hearing none, I will call for a vote on the motion. We'll do a roll call vote. So everyone is comfortable with the motion as far as how it reads, they understand it? Okay.
Yes.
And I will go to Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
I also vote aye. Let the record show it was a unanimous vote. Ms. Whalen, you will be able to put all this into writing and get it to Dr. Berger?
This is Margaret Whalen. Yes, Dr. Chrysagas, most definitely. And the patient will receive a copy as well. The complainant, excuse me.
Okay. Thank you very much for both of you for being with us today and helping us get through this. And we will move on. I would want to go to number five in this case. Joshua Rosen, OD, IR number 202017.
I'm sorry to speak, but am I dismissed?
Yes, you are.
Berger? Okay, thank you.
Yes. Would someone like to summarize this?
I can. This is Dr. Jones.
Okay.
This complaint is by patient AJ. They filed a complaint against Dr. Rodin for poor service, an improper RX, just resulting in poor vision where they had to go back several times. And I think that's about it.
Can I interject? This is Dr. AJ, patient.
Okay. So, would you like to say something?
Yes, I would like to summarize, if you wouldn't mind.
No, not at all.
Okay. Good morning, Dr. Kasimagis and board members. I am the patient. However, I am not medically trained. I'm not a medical doctor. But I don't believe that you should have to be a medical doctor to receive good medical care. And it is a serious concern that I wrote to the board about the substandard treatment that I received at the hands of Dr. Joshua Rodin. I had a contact eye exam on February 18th in the Costco Avondale branch. And after this, after receiving my contacts, my vision still remained blurry, and I was suffering also with eye strain and headaches. This is not the first time I've had contact lenses. However, it was the first time that I had used Costco and used Dr. Rodin, and I am short-sighted with an astigmatism. So I returned to the Costco on the 4th of March, and Dr. Rodin retested my eyes once more, and then he explained to me that he was rather surprised at the reading that suggested that my left eye was now minus 5, and he then continued to say, well, it could be minus 5.5 or minus 6.5. And that was despite having examined my eyes just 2 weeks prior to that. So that was quite disturbing. And also, at the time when he did issue me with a prescription on the 18th of February, he had said that my left eye was at minus 4.5 and my right at minus 3.75, which was not the reading that I typically have. Oh, it was an improved reading from what I typically have from my contact lenses. And notably, I was offered on the 18th of February the opportunity to dilate my eyes and just to check if anything else was going on. I said, well, I will certainly take that opportunity. However, the prescription was provided to me after my eyes were dilated, and I can only assume, not being medically trained, that perhaps this had an impact on the prescription that I was given. However, he had finalized my prescription reading based on my reading when my eyes were dilated. So when I returned on the 4th, he went through the checking again, and my main concern came with his response to my question when I asked him, well, how could it vary so much? His response was to say, I don't really care. I was both astounded and dismayed that an optometrist could take, or any professional could take, such a position. And it seemed to me that he was employing what could only be described as a trial and error technique to correct my vision. He
because he said, well, you can always go to the grocery store and get some reading glasses, and we'll just see how it goes. Dr. Roden actually provided me with some lenses in the office to try that very moment. And it was at that juncture I was both shocked and concerned by what he said, that I said to him that I no longer felt comfortable to go ahead and to be under his treatment. He apologized for his statement, that he clearly acknowledged that it wasn't appropriate. But he then added, you did not understand. I found that to be quite unprofessional and very condescending. I very clearly understood what he said. There is no context in which a medical professional should ever say to a patient, I don't care. It just shouldn't come up. So after that, I had informed, I left the office and I informed the management at Costco. No, actually, sorry, I just missed that. I had asked him for a refund for my exam, of which he refused, and also for my contact lenses. I then, with the refusal, I went to the customer service area, and as I was speaking to one of the assistants, she could see that I was clearly shocked, and she said, well, let's see if my manager can deal with this. A manager at Costco came and apologized profusely for what I had encountered, and I was issued with a refund. After that, I then visited my a different optometrist, and I wasn't given that diagnosis. That reconfirmed the fact that Dr. Roden's approach was clearly not correct. And so I thought I must bring this to the board, because under no circumstances should a patient be given being diagnosed by trial and error and be told to continue to use a trial and error technique to get their eye prescription. So that's why I brought this to the board's attention.
Thank you very much. Is Dr. Roden on the call by any chance?
Hi there. Yes, this is Dr. Roden.
Okay. Before we hear from you, do any of the board members have any questions for the patient? Okay. Dr. Roden, you'd like to summarize?
Absolutely. Thank you. I just want to say I think this is a matter of miscommunication, for which I'm sorry that it occurred, but I'll go ahead and I'll give my side of things. So I did see the patient on February 18th, who she came in with a tooth complaint, noted some history of headaches and extensive near work with academia. So I went through the prescription and found a relatively stable myopic prescription versus the previous entering glasses that were brought in. So I moved forward. We fit contact lenses and then proceeded with dilation using tropicamide. After the dilation, I did reassess the power of the contact lenses, and finding particularly in the right eye that there was a reduction in the myopia by about a diopter. No change in the left eye, however, the left eye was already reduced from the manifest prescription due to the limitations of which lenses we had in office. So essentially both eyes after tropicamide, after the cycloplegic effect, were about a diopter less myopic than previously. So being concerned about the extensive near work, about the history of headaches, I prescribed a reduced myopic prescription, hoping that that would help to alleviate some of the symptoms, help make it better for near work, and hoping to just improve the patient's vision overall. That being said, the patient did return on March 4th, still noting blur in the prescribed lenses. So I went ahead, I reassessed. I found a small shift in the right eye, about a half diopter more myopia. And then the left eye, as I was showing loose lenses over contact lenses, consistently accepted more and more power, which I don't believe was advantageous for the patient's vision, but that's where I did make a comment that I was seeing the patient accept more power all the way up to six diopters, which would have been a significant shift and a mistake to prescribe, I believe. So I decided to slightly increase the prescription, giving about a half diopter more of myopic correction, and I wanted to provide lenses to demonstrate that. So I went to our trial lens sets, and not having them in the dailies, which the patient preferred, I reached for Acuvue Oasys, the two-week lens, as that was available. At that point, I did return in to the patient and provided the lenses. The patient was aware that it was a different type of lens, a two-week lens rather than a daily, at which point I believe she made a comment, and myself perceiving that she was concerned about the lens modality and particularly what to do with the contact lenses I was providing at the time. I commented that I don't care what she does with the trial lenses because they're just trials. They weren't the full lens. I just needed to see how the power worked on the eye. At that point, the patient did become upset. I did not tell her that I don't care about her eyes or her prescription. I would not say that to a patient. She did ask for a refund at that time, which I am an independent contractor. I'm hired by the leaseholder at Costco. I wasn't able to authorize that. I have never authorized a refund. So I said that I would have to talk to my boss and find out. And before that was completed, then Costco had already offered a refund. So I think that is basically what happened. Any questions, anything I can clarify?
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much. I would like to begin a discussion, and as we talk, if you have any questions for either the doctor or the patient, you can ask them. And again, as I said before, if the doctor and the complainant could refrain from jumping in, if we have any questions, we'll ask you. So, any comments?
This is Dr. Jones. I have a couple of comments. You know, when I just look through all of the exam notes, it kind of just seems like if he would have taken his original refraction and just vertexed it for a contact lens fit, ordered those in, we wouldn't have had all of this issue. I also kind of question why he chose a certain lens, because her K's are like 45, 46, 40, I think 49. I have to look on it again. But, and he put her in a base curve of 8.8. I guess that was just kind of where I was looking through the fit notes.
The base curve and the lens doesn't bother me per se, only because that's what she was fit with the second place too. As far as the dailies, I think there were dailies to work, weren't they? If I remember right.
Yeah.
Can
I comment on that?
Okay.
I'd be happy to provide some clarification.
Okay.
So I originally fit in the Oasys one day, which the patient had commented that that was what they were used to. And then after they went out, they checked with Costco Optical, who had record of what they had previously purchased. They had previously been fit in the Dailies Aqua Comfort Plus Torque. So that was just the habitual lens, as Costco revealed it to us.
And as the second prescription that Costco gave out later with the higher minus, they were Aqua Comfort Plus also.
That is correct.
So I don't have a specific problem with that. I was going to ask about the difference between the Spectacle RX and the Contact Lens RX, because even when you take the Vertex into account, it was definitely under minus. But I think you answered that saying because of the fact that she was having headaches and she was when she was dilated, she came down a little bit. I would always try and push the plus on a 39-year-old, just because, at least that's what she was then, only because of doing a lot of upholstery work, anything you could do to reduce that. So I don't have I guess one of the things I wanted to say, and that basically for the patient's benefit, the quote-unquote trial and error method is depending on what the situation is. Sometimes with contact lenses, I'll have to admit that we do that. There are various times where I will give a patient a contact lens. If I'm changing the prescription a little bit or whatever, I'll say, here, I want you to try this and see how it goes. And call me back or come back into the office, depending on what it is. I might see them back, or they might just call and say, especially if I'm lowering the power, I'll say, I want you to try this. And if you start having problems driving at night or something, this, that, and the other, then we can redo it. In essence, it is a trial and error method, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't necessarily mean that it's lack of care, because I have some patients that probably get tired of seeing me from trial and error methods of trying to find something that works. But I totally understand the thought process that it should be a given. This is the prescription, and this is what we get. In trying to undercorrect that, which would have been a good thing if it had worked going forward, but it didn't, and so something else was tried. Any other comments as we go through this? Okay. If we have no comments, then we need to move on and answer the and call the question. So I need some type of a motion.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll make a motion to dismiss, as I see no violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you.
This is Dr. Hunter. I'll second.
Thank you very much. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Let's have some discussion. Any discussion on the motion?
I just think that maybe in future, Dr. Roden can just make sure that, you know, when he's doing contact lenses, maybe think about ordering some in and not just letting her go home with whatever you have in the back. You know, I think that's what I would look at. Otherwise, I don't see anything else.
Also, as part of the discussion, I would also agree basically what Dr. Jones said, in the fact that if you are trying something and you are lowering a prescription, I wouldn't write a prescription for it to have someone go out and buy them. I would definitely try them, and I'll go back to the trial and error thing, which in some ways is bad, in some ways is good, but you try them first. If they work, you buy them. But to buy them and then have them be undercorrected just creates a bigger problem for the patient to have to go back and go through all this. So it can work both ways. Any further comments or discussion? Okay. Hearing none, I'll call the question. We'll do the roll call vote again. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Let the record show it was a unanimous decision. I thank both participants for being here with us and helping us. Ms. Whalen will be in touch with you as far as a written documentation of what we just did. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to move on to number two. Okay. Number two, Stephen Wiseman, OD, IR number 202. Would someone like to summarize this case, please?
So patient MR saw Dr. Wiseman for an eye exam. She's a nurse practitioner. She was recommended to get a progressive addition lens for work so that she didn't have to put her over the counters on and off. She had used a plus 150 in the past. She was having difficulty adjusting to the progressive. She felt like it was too strong. It should be noted in the manifest she had some plus at the distance, which she wasn't accustomed to wearing. When she returned, she was re-refracted and given a new prescription where Dr. Wiseman cut the plus at distance in half. Patient still had some difficulty with the glasses, came back a third time, was re-refracted, and new glasses were ordered at that point. However, she did not return to pick up the third pair of glasses. I believe she filed the complaint and then contested the charge with her credit card company. However, Dr. Wiseman's office did refund the money, and I believe the complaint was settled between the parties.
That is a good summary. Are either the doctor or the complainant on the phone? Okay, I think so. Any discussion or any motion? Okay.
I'll make a motion to dismiss. There's no violation of the Optometric Practice Act. This is Dr. Moffitt.
Thank you, Dr. Moffitt.
This is Dr. Jones.
Thank you. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion on the motion?
This is Dr. Jones. I mean, it looks like they ended up refunding her money, and she was wrote back in and withdrew the complaint also. So I just kind of wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, that she did do that. All right. Any more discussion? Okay, we'll go to the vote. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
And I vote aye. Unanimous to dismiss. Let's go to number four. We'll come back to number three. One Alavi OD, Amy Bojwani OD, IR number 202015. Someone summarize this one, please.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I can summarize.
Thank you.
Okay. Patient GBS saw Dr. Alavi for an eye exam and contact lenses. She had dry eye complaints and wanted to try contact lenses after having not worn contact lenses for 16 years. Excuse me. She was status post LASIK OU. She was in her early 50s. She returned 1 week shy of 1 year later to pick up the first set of trial lenses. I believe she had called before that time, just recently called, trying to get the contact lens prescription. In her defense, her brother had had a stroke, and so she was caring for him. She was told at the time by the office that there was no contact lens prescription completed and that she needed to return for trial lenses. At that point, Dr. Bojwani saw her when she walked in. So she accommodated her into her schedule and saw at the time that it had been only 1 week shy of 1 year since her last visit and gave her a set of trial lenses. I should also mention this was monovision and said that these would get her through, but she needed a new eye exam. The patient's concerns were that she was never provided a contact lens prescription and that she didn't know that she had to follow up.
Thank you very much. Any comments, motions?
Members of the board, my name is Vinny Litfar. I am counsel for Dr. Alavi and Dr. Bojwani, who are both also present on the phone call. They wanted to give, in an effort not to be redundant with their responses to the board, they wanted to give a brief summary and then obviously make themselves available for any questions from the board. I'll go ahead and step aside and let them do that.
I am a patient, GBS, and I also would like to respond.
Okay, perfect. I'm sorry I didn't ask for this before. I didn't realize you were on the phone. Okay,
I've been listening. Yes.
If we go according to what I've done in the past, I'll let the patient go first. If you'd like to give us a summary.
Yes, I allege that on 8/17/2008, I went to the Vision Works, and when I left, I believe they violated the AAC R421306 code, which is federal law that requires optometrists to release a contact lens prescription at the end of the exam. I had my eyes examined. I was never told. I never received any written documentation that I needed to return. I actually went to a different provider. I believe that VisionWorks is engaging in anti-competitive practices. I basically first needed just glasses, so I went to another provider, and I was told that I didn't have any available funds through my insurance, which floored me. Then I they looked into it, and they said that VisionWorks had ordered quite a few pairs of contact lenses. So I had to call VisionWorks, and I had them cancel it so I could order a pair of glasses. Then my brother did have a series of strokes, and I actually resigned from teaching. I've been a teacher for over 20 years in Arizona. Then when I realized that I was going to go ahead and go back to work, and I did have LASIK done about 16, 17 years ago, and just from aging and eye changing, I was doing okay with glasses, but then I felt like I might want to try contacts again. So when I went back, I actually had gone to another provider, and they said that VisionWorks would not release my prescription. So I called VisionWorks, and I do realize that this is, I'm cutting it close within the one-year time frame, but I did have 1 year. Then I spoke with someone, and her name was Alexa, and she gave me confirmation that they were going to go ahead and order a trial pair. And I do have a very unique prescription. So 2 days later, I went in and spoke with an associate at VisionWorks, Angelique. She was very rude and abrupt, and she said there's no order placed, and they would not release the prescription. And this is still, once again, cutting it close, but I was within the 365 days. I did get, they did say that they could see me, and I thought I was getting my prescription. So I went back, and I have not worn contacts in a while. So Angelique said, put these in. I had full makeup on. I didn't think, like, I know my three daughters have worn contacts their whole life, that I need to wash my hands. I shouldn't have had makeup on. So it took quite a few tries, and I got them in. The exam was relatively quick, like 2 to 3 minutes, and I said, my vision is not clear. I'm not seeing clearly. So I was really surprised when I saw, because I'd come back later to get all the records, that the doctor had put on 8/13/2019, good comfort, fit, and vision. Because that is absolutely the opposite of what I had said. So then I believe they just gave me a pair of the contact lenses just to get me out of their hair. When, and I honestly wonder if I have such a unique prescription. How they've never had them in stock before. How do they just happen to have this very interesting prescription in stock? And I kept the contacts because I honestly wondered if maybe they gave me not my prescription. And then, once again, they would not, even though it was within 365 days, they would not provide a prescription, which does go against the administrative code. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Hey, doctors?
Dr. Chrysagas, yes, this is Margaret. Excuse me. Could you have the attorney for Drs. Bourjouanian and Alavi state his name one more time for the record? I apologize.
Yeah, no problem. My first name is Vinny. Last name Lichvar, L-I-C-H. V as in Victor, A-R.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. And the doctors, before you speak, if you could let us know who you are, too. Thank you.
Hi, this is Dr. Bourjouani. Good morning. My name is Dr. Bourjouani. I currently work at Dr. Gary G. Bonin's practice in Paradise Valley, where I've been practicing as an optometrist for 6 months. Prior to that, I worked at Tom Soash and Associates Next to VisionWorks at Superstition Springs for over 2 years, which is where I saw this patient. I have been a licensed optometrist for almost 5 years. In my career, I have never had a patient complaint or any other legal issues. I treat all my patients as I would want to be treated myself. Throughout my career, I have routinely received compliments from my patients, particularly with regards to the thoroughness of my examination. I take this current complaint very seriously. I respect this current process for reviewing and evaluating this complaint. I want you to know that I treated this patient with the utmost respect at her visit, as I do with all my patients. I also did everything in my ability to satisfy her existing concerns without compromising the health of her eyes. As you know, the patient was initially seen by another doctor at the same practice at her initial comprehensive exam almost a year prior to my examination with her. So the patient came to see me for the first time 4 days before her glasses prescription was to expire. The patient had never returned for her contact lens follow-up. The patient insisted she would not leave the office without any contact lens, but did not want another comprehensive exam. As documented in the chart, I did everything I could do to help the patient at that visit without compromising the health of her eyes. I fit her in a temporary pair of contact lens on her insistence to get her by until her full exam, which was due in 4 days, and checked the comfort fit and vision, which was documented as being adequate 20/20. I explained each step I made and the reason for doing so along the way. I repeatedly explained to her, before and during the exam, why she would not be receiving her contact lens prescription that day, which was due to the need for a comprehensive eye exam because nearly a year had elapsed since her last full eye exam. The patient's vision and eye health are my number one priority. The decisions I made with this patient were with that goal in mind. I'm happy to answer any follow-up questions you may have about my interactions with this patient. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Good morning. This is Dr. Pune Alavi.
Good morning.
Alavi. I saw the patient on the initial visit. Patient came in presenting that she is interested in wearing contact lenses as her main concern and complaint and reason for office visit. And she indicated that she was status post-LASIK procedure. I've been practicing optometry since 2007. I hold 2-state license. I've never had any complaints of any kind filed against me. Patient care is my main reason I went to optometry school because I wear glasses and contact lenses. And I treat them like I would like my parents who are not with me to be treated when they go to any other office. It is my practice to explain to the patient that they have to come back for contact lens fitting and finalization. If they have never been seen in our office, if I change any modality, if there is a change in prescription. The patient was never seen in our offices. The patient was status post-LASIK. I did not know whether the refraction or the glasses that I had performed was exactly going to work or not. That's what I do for every patient that I've never seen before. Hence, I informed her that I'm ordering her 2 sets of lenses and that she does need to come back. All of those things were explained. When I order trials, the staff does not have any prescription finalized for them to order any purchasing purposes for contact lenses. I ordered 2 sets of lenses for the patient. I wasn't quite sure which one would fit better for her given her status post of LASIK surgery. She also complained about dryness. Given the maturity of the eye, I also prescribed over-the-counter lubrication, explaining to her that I want her to blink a little bit more and I'd be aware of her blinking and lubricate the eyes and the effect of dryness and contact lens. I went to the contact lens room. I did not have anything to the exact power of the patient, and I did not have anything close to the power of the patient. So hence, I ordered the two sets of contact lens. I do not know where I have failed in patient care or violations of the law. So I am here to answer any question that the board may have in regards to this. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do any board members have any questions for the patient or either doctor?
No.
No.
Okay. Then
This is Dr. Jones. I would like to make a motion to dismiss the case due to lack of violation of the Optometric Practice Act.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Dr. Maskless, I second.
Okay. I have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I have some discussion I would offer, and this is mostly for the benefit of the patient, GBS. There are a number of things that stick out here. One, if you have a patient who, like your daughters that you were referencing, who wear contact lenses, and they present and have a healthy eye exam, normal eye exam, and you know what they currently wear and they have no complaints and you have only small changes to make, then you may, from the eye exam, also issue a contact lens prescription, if you feel comfortable with those parameters. However, there are times when a patient may present when you do not feel comfortable with the pre-existing parameters. For instance, in your case, you had dry eye complaints. You were a monovision fit, which meant that one eye was going to be corrected for distance, one eye for near, and getting the right balance of vision so that you are comfortable and that you adapt to both the distance and near numbers is really important. The biggest factor here is also that your status post LASIK. So when you've had LASIK done and your cornea has been manually altered via a laser, the cornea is flattened centrally and oftentimes will not fit in a standard contact lens the way that you might want. The lens itself may actually flex and almost wrinkle to some extent. I use that word loosely, but that's essentially what's going on with the lens. And it can induce aberration into the vision and discomfort with the fit. For all of those reasons, you needed to be fit diagnostically with a contact lens. And then your experience with the lens, you needed to have some experience with the lens to find out if you were happy with the comfort, the vision, and the fit, and if the doctor was happy with the comfort, the vision, and the fit. So in this case, just because you had an eye exam did not constitute a contact lens fit. This is consistent with the law, and the doctors behaved perfectly appropriately, in my opinion, and in the eyes of the statute. That's the extent of my comment.
Thank you. Thank you. I was going to add, I mean, you said a lot of things that I was going to say, and if the patients and the doctors were on for the last one, when we were talking about trial and error, this is a specific one where you would be doing trial and error because you don't know how that lens is going to react. The only thing I would add is hopefully one thing the doctors might have learned from this is maybe doing a better job of explaining to the patient at the beginning as to the fact that they do have to come back, they do have to be seen. And I'm not saying they didn't do that, I'm just saying if not, but they might want to make a point of it, that in this case, yeah, you have to see a lens on the eye after a while to make sure it works, then we'll write a final prescription. And so that's all I wanted to say. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll do a roll call vote on the motion at hand. Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris?
Aye.
I also vote aye. Unanimous to dismiss for lack of violation. Thank you very much to all of you that were on the call today.
Thank you.
Number Number three, Anthony Gish, OD, IR number 202013. And I do believe that the by now the patient and counsel are on the line.
Yeah.
Counsel.
Okay.
Counsel for Dr. Gish is on the line.
Okay, I will be back. But could a member of the board summarize this case for me?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I can summarize.
Okay. Thank you.
So the complaint against Dr. Gish was filed by patient's mother, SK. Patient's initials are ZL. She is an adult, age 19. She was initially seen, I think, December 20th for a LASIK consult. At that visit, it was discussed, although we don't have records to this effect, I gather that she was a fine candidate for LASIK, and then also because she was returning to NAU as a student following the procedure, that she would follow up with providers in another locale, and I didn't write those down.
Phoenix or Tempe?
Yes, Phoenix or Tempe, thank you. So Dr. Gish and patient ZL, I think starting later that day, had an Instagram exchange, and it was hard to see in the record. So I believe that per Dr. Gish's attorney, the patient initiated contact by following Dr. Gish. However, who reached out to who first, I couldn't tell from the Instagram messages. In a series of messages, Dr. Gish and patient ZL, I guess I would say escalated in their exchange. There is the suggestion from Dr. Gish's attorney that patient ZL sent a video, which was deleted after having been viewed, of her dancing on a pole. And Dr. Gish sent a video of himself, two videos, in fact, in bed, one just with his picture of him and his retainer. Second one was somewhat sexually suggestive. Well, it's definitely sexually suggestive with him pushing down his covers to below his waistband. Patient's attorney suggests that there was no expectation of further care between the two, and therefore their professional interaction had ceased at that point. Although there is nothing written in the record to that effect, Dr. Gish, when patient's mother SK filed a complaint or reached out to his employer, Vision Group Holdings, did let Dr. Gish go or fired him, terminated him for cause with complaints of inappropriate prior behavior, although they gave no evidence or supporting documentation to that effect. They also provided no record of the visit of patient ZL with Dr. Gish. So we don't have that to review. Just as a follow-up, Dr. Gish has also, he self-reported to the board, patient ZL actually followed up
Excuse me, doctor, if I can interrupt.
Yeah.
There's something in the background again, some kind of noise.
Oh.
If someone could mute their phone, I'd appreciate it. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, that's okay.
Go ahead.
So patient ZL actually had the procedure and then did end up following up with Dr. Gish for a post-op visit. At that point, patient ZL's mother accompanied her and confronted Dr. Gish after exam was done and suggested that he had behaved inappropriately with her daughter and provided her phone number, suggested that her daughter ZL was going to need a lot of therapy following this exchange on Instagram, and that she wanted to know how he was going to make that right, and also left her phone number. Last comment, Dr. Gish has done some proactive measures. He self-reported to Margaret Whalen, our executive director on the board, and he has also completed some CME on ethics and boundaries, and also just recently reported, I think it was 34 hours of CME just this last week. think that covers my summary.
Okay, thank you very much. As we've done in the past, we'll, did I hear that the patient or the complainant is on the line? Oh, I thought I heard that. Okay, so that being said, if the attorney and doctor could introduce themselves, you can give a summary.
Yes, President, members of the board, this is Flynn Carey, counsel for Dr. Gish. I also have Dr. Gish on the line. First of all, I appreciate Dr. Moffitt's very even recount of what happened. I think it's I think she went through it in a very appropriate and detailed way. So I do have some comments. I will. I'm going to spend a moment trying to pare those down a bit, so I'm not duplicating what Dr. Moffitt put out on the record. But I would ask if the board would entertain Dr. Gish first, making a brief statement.
That's fine. Thank you,
Dr. Gish.
Yes, I wanted to thank everybody for the opportunity to appear before you today. I am quite embarrassed about the situation and my decision making just a couple months ago. Had I set firmer boundaries, I would not be in this situation. I understand the gravity of the situation, and I don't think to minimize or justify what occurred. I have learned so much in the past couple months. I learned that being a professional isn't about the process of learning or refining the technical skills only, but it's also about just being your best version of yourself. I also recognize that having a healthy, balanced, and responsible lifestyle in my personal life also affects me as a professional. And when it comes to the work we do, it's not just how you act as a professional and your skills, it's also those interpersonal communicational skills. In this instance, had I, I had an interest in somebody because I felt this person liked me based on them reaching out to me on Instagram. And in fact, I felt flattered. I liked the attention that she was giving me, and we engaged in this conversation via Instagram in a flirtatious way. And I honestly believe that I had concluded our relationship in the professional setting. And I understand that even though that I believe that professional relationship had concluded, it still wasn't a smart decision for me to engage in this relationship with her. So when her disinterest became apparent to me via the messaging, I apologized, stopped contacting her, and I didn't engage in conversation with her any further. And how this situation unfolded has really shown me why it's best practice to set those boundaries and never let there be a crossover between the professional life and my personal life. And it's been a hard, painful lesson for me. It's something that I'll never let happen again. And as you guys had mentioned, I've devoted a lot of hours to understanding how this occurred. And I'm thankful for the training that I received with the course of the PBI, Professional Ethics and Boundaries course. It's been invaluable. It's taught me so many strategies for making sure that these boundaries are maintained, and taught me just ways in which I can make the best decisions for myself and my employer and patients, and quite honestly for my profession. And I know that I let down my profession in this instance, and it's embarrassing for me to say that, but it's also something that I realize and I'm taking responsibility for. So I recognize that my license is a privilege, and it's something that I won't forget in the lessons I learned here. So again, I just wanted to say I'm deeply sorry for what I did, and I just really appreciate the opportunity to express what occurred in detail here. So thank you. That's all.
Thank you.
And I have just some brief comments for the board. I had the chance to listen. This board, I had the chance to listen to throughout the morning, and I appreciate that this board prizes communication, and it prizes really the professionalism side of the practice. And, you know, I practice in front of a lot of boards, so it varies on how boards approach these situations. I think, though, what's really relevant here is that Dr. Gish really has risen to the occasion to correct what occurred. I would note a few things from a legal perspective. The first one is that the scope of the treatment relationship between Dr. Gish and the patient was very limited, and it was meant to really be a single appointment only. As Dr. Moffitt indicated, this patient saw Dr. Gish in Tucson, where he was based out of. The company has locations in Phoenix and Tempe. They don't have one in Flag, where she was going to go for school. So he had a reasonable belief that the professional relationship had ended. He was not there to do her post-op follow-up. He was there to assess her candidacy. I think it's important that nothing occurred during the evaluation, and the contact was initiated. I know it's hard to see that from the materials that you have, and that's just a technological limitation of what we are able to provide the board. But she did initiate by liking him or joining him or following him on Instagram, and that's where the contact ensued. I would note that we did provide you information of the consensual nature of their contact, and I think that Dr. Moffitt explained it well, being a kind of an escalating or an increasing level of contact between the two, but it was mutual. And I think the tone and the content of all the messages that we were able to provide is that it was a consensual encounter. So I don't think this is one of those situations where out of the blue a professional attempts to communicate with a patient. I also think the thing that's tough is there was that follow-up appointment. That follow-up appointment was not planned, as we talked about. The patient was going to go to Phoenix or Tempe. And what I was, what was tough here is that this is a necessary post-op appointment at a location where they staff only one professional. And so he was in a position where it was either see the patient or potentially abandon the patient. I would note that the mother was present. It's certainly, and he did he did speak with the patient to confirm that she was willing to still be seen by him despite their previous communications, and she did consent to that. I think that, you know, by no means to try to justify or excuse the situation, I would note that if the situation was as mother represented, that this was somehow traumatic or harmful, I think it is unlikely that mother would have brought daughter to a follow-up appointment. I think it would have been more likely that mother would have simply confronted Dr. Gish, but the idea that she brought the supposedly traumatized daughter to another appointment, it should be problematic for the board. It should raise a question as to motivations. I also think, you know, the issue of providing that post-it note and using language that would seem to indicate that Dr. Gish needed to do something to make the situation right, whether that's coded or not coded language, it's concerning. And I think it certainly explains why keeping those boundaries and not engaging after a treatment relationship is terminated is important, but I think it should be factored in. I think what tells the tale, though, is how Dr. Gish treated this situation afterwards. And without betraying any client confidentiality, he reached out to Dr. Whelan before having counsel, Executive Director Whelan before having counsel. He did that in an earnest way, in which he reported exactly what he has reported in his response to the board about what happened. And I think the fact that he made the choice to lean into this situation directly with the board, as opposed to you know, attempt to quote unquote make things okay or make things better with the patient. I think it shows his character, and I think it shows his nature of being contrite and being earnest about this situation. And I hope the board certainly will take that into account. Finally, I think there is pretty significant rehabilitation here. In addition to reporting on his own, he did go to PBI. I don't know if the board has as much familiarity with PBI, but it is the same program that the MDs, the DO board, and several other of the healthcare boards will assign professionals to in areas of boundaries, ethics. They have charting and record keeping as well. It's generally considered the gold standard. It is by no means inexpensive, but it is intensive. It is 34 hours of pre-session and session, and then you're assigned a coach, essentially, and you have teleconferences. And it is the most comprehensive ethics and professionalism programming available to healthcare professionals. And Dr. Gish chose voluntarily to take on that work. And I think it is, I think it again speaks to his overall character. We certainly appreciate the optics here. We appreciate the concerns here. We would respectfully ask the board to consider a non-disciplinary outcome in this case for the legal issues that I've outlined in my response letter, but also because of the remediation that occurred here. We're certainly open for questions if the board has any.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions from any board members or comments?
I guess a few comments. This is Dr. Moffitt, excuse me. One point that I hope Dr. Gish has certainly acknowledged, I guess, or really understood at this point, is that once you've seen a patient as their doctor, you have no idea if they're going to come back to you at some point in the future. So without actually either firing the patient or explicitly writing and communicating that you will be unable to provide care in the future, you still have a doctor-patient relationship with that person. And for me, at least when I'm reading those Instagram exchanges, had you said at any point in there, I can't see you in a professional capacity in the future, that would have done a lot to communicate that you did not expect to see her in the future. I also understand in the record that you, at your initial visit, noted that she was going to follow up with another provider, but that's not the same thing as not being a provider for that patient at some point in the future. And when Vision Group Holdings responded, they said that there was no record of that visit with a referral to another provider, which I'm not saying it doesn't exist, just that that was their response to that. And so that in and of itself is a big issue for why you're here. And so I'm also very encouraged by the measures that you've taken with the CME and the PBI board. I'm mollified by that, I guess, is one way to put it. And just one other comment, and this was with regard to the unprofessional conduct concerns, is that, you know, in our statutes, one of the justifications for unprofessional conduct is conduct that discredits the profession. And so I'm hoping that this whole situation has taught you that, how unfortunately this can go for all parties. And those were just my major concerns.
Thank you,
Dr. Moffitt.
I do have to ask one more time just to make sure that the patient or the complainant is not on the line. And that's what I thought, because that's telling to me, without going into any specifics, them not being here to defend themselves, even though she was traumatized and will need therapy. Again, I'm not belittling the situation at all. I'm just saying there's two sides to every story, and it sounds like there's definitely some the thought process going on with Dr. Gish now as far as what he's been and where he's going going forward. I was not having the records too didn't help to where, and we can still get those, by the way, if we feel that's necessary to make some type of judgment, to get the records to see if anything was in there concerning the referring the patient to Phoenix or Tempe. But as you said, you were a patient and you still are until somehow you say you're not. But I just wanted to say that. Any other comments or any motion, if people have heard enough, I'm open. Hearing none, I would actually like to make a motion. I would like to issue a letter of concern, and this is where it might get sticky. I might need some help, Ms. Baskin, as far as personal conduct, unprofessional conduct, and discredit to the profession, or however that was termed. How was that said before? I can't remember.
There's a strong suggestion of unprofessional conduct.
Unprofessional
conduct and conduct detrimental to the profession. Go ahead.
May I offer up a suggestion?
Sure.
I think you're looking for a letter of concern for unprofessional conduct for possible violation of ARS 32-1701-8-0, conduct that discredits the profession?
That is exactly what I was saying.
Okay, thank you.
I just couldn't verbalize it that way. Yeah, what you said?
Dr. Basagas, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin, and I think you're going to need to put a little bit more meat on the bones there and maybe describe what conduct you think rises to that level. I mean, even though it is a non-disciplinary letter, it could be regarding the communication of the termination of the doctor-patient relationship. It seems like that's one of the things that the board is focused on. So if you could just provide a little bit more information in what you're going to be advising the doctor.
Okay. I'm pacing the floor here in my office, just trying to. I would say a letter of concern regarding the possible violation of, as you mentioned, the ARS for unprofessional conduct as it relates to the patient's out of office behavior with the
personal
patient and
yeah.
the lack. A personal relationship without adequate without adequate cessation of professional
termination.
Care. Termination of professional care. I mean, I'm looking for a wordsmith. So basically, Margaret, how would you have that written? Based on what I just said.
Thank you, Dr. Chrysagas. This is Margaret Whalen. I have you move to issue a letter of concern for unprofessional conduct for possible violation of ARS 32-1701-8-0 for personal relationship with a patient without termination of care from the practice. Termination of care or from the practice?
Yeah.
This is Mona Baskin. It would be, I think the focus is termination on the doctor-patient relationship,
okay.
And I think that's
yes.
what Mr. Carey was speaking about in his statements to the board.
All right, one second, please. Okay, so still the first part with the statute for personal relationship with a patient without termination of the doctor-patient relationship. Prior to doing so.
There you go.
Does that
say
what you wanted
to say? That says what I wanted to say, whether that's the way it's supposed to be. But if that suffices for counsel, then I say yeah, that's what I wanted to say.
This is Dr. Moffitt. I second.
Oh, thank you. Any discussion?
I'll just say to Dr. Gish. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, because you're probably going to say the same thing I was going to say.
This is Dr. Moffitt, and I was just going to say to Dr. Gish that I think that you have handled this this series of events after they occurred. I think you've handled yourself well, and I think that this process is probably punishment in and of itself, and hopefully going forward we won't see anything like this again.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Thank you,
I was
doctor.
Going to add that I don't think we have to add any CME to the program, because you had, we'll just say, great legal advice saying that this is what we need you to do, because this is what they're going to have you do anyway. And doing that proactively, I think, speaks volumes also. So, any further discussion? Okay. We'll do a roll call vote. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Dr. Mastores?
Aye.
And I vote aye. Unanimous decision. Thank you very much. Appreciate you being on. Have a great weekend, and we'll move on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. I don't, but I'm trying to be nice and ask. Does anyone need a break for a second? If we're going for 2 hours,
no.
We can continue. Okay, let's move on. Item E, even though hopefully we're on the downhill side. E, review discussion of possible action on requested amendment of the probationary order for David Anderson, OD. It seems Dr. Anderson is requesting an amendment to the order because we had an in-person requirement for the medical review, and he has found someone out of state that I know I have heard speak, and he does do this. It's not something off the wall, but he has to get permission to do that. The only other thing I'll mention is that I don't know of anyone. Well, no, I shouldn't say I don't know of anyone. I mean, I know Dr. Sorensen does that in Arizona, but our order doesn't say it has to be someone in Arizona. It just says they have to come to the office and be there. Is that not what it says, where they have to come to the practice?
This is Margaret.
Margaret.
That's correct. I apologize. I forgot to provide a copy of the order for your reference.
But yes. I know the order said something about Arizona. It wasn't that it had to be an Arizona-based person. It just had to be someone that came to the practice. Is that correct?
Correct. It just says licensed optometrist, and they have to do in-person visits once a month.
Okay. Okay. So, again, because it could be difficult to find someone, because I only know of one Arizona that does that. But, and if I remember right, he was told that he shouldn't use Dr. Sorensen because it could be a conflict of interest.
Correct.
Because he was at his, part of his, okay. So, I mean, especially nowadays, under the present circumstances, of travel and everything else, I mean, even without that, I would have probably, voted to do it. But, under these circumstances, especially, I mean, again, this is just my opinion. We're going to discuss it. I don't have a problem letting Dr. Botts do the reviews electronically. Any thoughts?
This is Dr. Moffitt. If you say he's a qualified reviewer and we've looked at him, that's fine with me also. I had separate issues with his CE that he submitted here, Dr. Anderson, so...
Okay, we can definitely talk about that as an addendum to the order that we had. But as far as, again, I've never used Dr. Botts. I just know he's an optometrist that speaks about coding, billing, etc. But I also know that he gets paid to do that, and I just wanted to make sure it was someone that wasn't being. He was a client, and now he's also a client doing this because it might be a biased situation, but I don't think he's used them before.
This is Margaret Whalen. Mr. President, may I speak?
Sure.
Mr. President, members of the board, I think I should clarify that Under the order, Dr. Chrysagas has the authority to review the continuing education and approve the review and approve the monitor, the practice monitor. So we did receive the curriculum vitae and process plan for Dr. Eric Botts. He's a licensed optometrist out of the state of Illinois. And Dr. Chrysagas, if I recall correctly, has done a preliminary review. So if the board does want to amend the order today or lift that requirement, I think you could also approve the use of Dr. Botts at the same time.
Is
based on Dr.
that require
Chrysagas'
a
review, unless you want to see the trend, you know, the CV for yourself.
Does that require a motion and a vote, or is that
yes.
just something we?
Yes. In
yes.
order to amend the order,
Dr.
you will have to.
Okay. All right.
And Dr. Chrysagas, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin. Yes, I would concur. You would need to have a motion that would actually amend the order, and then Ms. Whalen will have to go ahead and issue an amended order for the doctor in this case.
Okay. Then, but you also mentioned, Margaret, something about we could change things with the CE. So is this where we could bring up Dr. Moffitt's comments about CE?
If it's part of the order that you want to amend, then yes, you can discuss.
Or would it be a separate? Because let's discuss that then, Dr. Moffitt. Because we'll see if we want to make it part of the order, or if we just make it a separate thing that we don't agree with the CME that he took. What
sure.
were your concerns?
So this is Dr. Moffitt, and I looked up that CE, and it's for social workers, and. Really has it's for mental health workers, and in particular in this case for social workers, and I don't see how that actually satisfies our concerns or the reasons that we ordered the CE in the first place. So my inclination would be that no, these don't satisfy the concerns or his order of CE, but I'm perfectly willing to accept Dr. Chrysagas' evaluation of Dr. Eric Botts as a qualified reviewer.
This is Margaret Whalen. Mr. President, members of the board,
yes.
One of the requirements of the order was that the continuing education be approved prior to taking the course. So Dr. Chrysagas had reviewed that continuing education and approved it.
I had?
Yes. I mean, it's possible that we did not know it was for social workers, because sometimes, you know, the brochure that we get or whatever, you know, curriculum vitae doesn't speak to that. But is that the one he took in Texas, Dr. Moffitt?
No, I think he's asking if we'll approve these courses, because it says in his letter, I've had difficulty finding continuing education hours on ethics, so Margaret suggested I find CE for healthcare professionals and submit the courses to you for approval. And then it's these two courses listed, and then I looked them up on the website that he provided, and they are for mental health providers, and specifically those two courses are for social workers.
Okay.
And I guess my opinion is that the reason we had concern about his ethics, it doesn't really share professional concerns for social workers. And so I'm not sure that he would really get much from this. That was my concern.
Okay. This is Margaret Whalen. I beg your pardon, Dr. Moffitt. I thought you were talking about the other course that was approved. So, no, those haven't been, and you're correct. My guidance was...
Oh, thank you.
My direction was to choose something that was ACCME approved, so that it would be medically based through either a medical board or association, since he said there wasn't anything, you know, for optometrists specifically, was my recommendation.
Right.
Well, I got to tell you, had we ever worked with this group that Dr. Gish's attorney had him use? That medical board uses
CDI looked good.
That looked, I mean, have we ever even discussed them?
No, we haven't.
Dr. Chrysagas, members of the board, this is Mona Baskin, and I can affirm that TBI group is one of the two groups that healthcare boards do use and use it.
Because that
looks
amazing.
It is one of the, right, it is. And they have several levels of programs. I'm not too sure if they have one that would coincide with the
amount of CEs that we that the board ordered for Dr. Anderson, but it is used a lot, and the feedback that boards have been getting on that course is that it meets the high standard of ethics, and they deal with medical professionals specifically.
Yeah, you know, and we can't go back and put that into our order because that's in the past, but in the future we could definitely steer people towards that education, which I thought was a great idea when I was reading what he was going through there. But in this case, this might be something you can just suggest to Dr. Anderson that you did a bunch of research and you found out this place that he could go to find out to get some great courses on ethics and exactly what we're talking about.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
So then, going forward, we can. Was there a motion?
No,
or was
not
I
yet.
Just talking? Okay, I'd like to make a motion that we approve Dr. Botts to review the files for Dr. Anderson electronically.
Could you move to amend the order first, Dr. Chrysagas?
Pardon?
Could you move to amend the order first and lift the requirement for in-person visits?
Okay. The motion is going to be changed. I'd like to make a motion to to amend the order to lift the requirement of an in-office review of records. Do I have to say why, whether it's because of... Okay. Then suffice it to say to lift the requirement of an in-person review of records.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Motion and second. Any discussion? Yeah. Any discussion? Hearing none. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Mastoris. Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
And I vote aye also, so it's unanimous. Now, so I don't hog it up, but someone else can make a motion for.
Well, you're going to
Dr. Moffitt.
Okay.
Oh.
Go ahead.
Pardon me?
Okay. So I'd like to make a motion to allow Dr. Eric Botts to serve as the records reviewer for Dr. Anderson.
Is that Dr. Jones?
I'll second.
This is Dr. Moffitt.
Dr.
Moffitt and Dr. Chrysagas will second. Any discussion on that motion? Okay, we'll vote. Dr. Jones.
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt.
Aye.
Dr. Hunter.
Aye.
Dr. Mastoris.
Aye.
And I also vote aye. Unanimous, so he can use Dr. Botts and we can move on, and then you can let him know about other options for his continuing CE. Okay. Executive Director approval of new license application pursuant to ARS 32-3123. These were approved. Everything is okay with all of with A through D?
Yes.
Okay. And again, we don't have to vote on that. We just
for the record.
Say thank you or yeah, okay.
You're welcome.
And no problem. Now, G, review, discussion, and possible action on pending regular license application. Item 8, Derek Phelps. You're up.
Mr. President and the board members, this is Paula. Dr. Phelps, he had disclosed something in his past, a previous arrest, but when we got his fingerprints back, everything came back negative. So Ms. Whalen felt that you should look at it and look over it and decide on this one.
Because there's another one, too, and they both had, one was this the one that was, he did the, whatever program he had to do, deferral program, or where he, and then they dismissed the charges. But the problem is we don't know what this stuff. I mean, one was underage drinking, I think. But basically, all I'm saying is we really didn't know what was going on because we don't see the verbiage anymore. And I don't know how we're supposed to make a decision. Now, this one, if he disclosed something that there's nothing on his fingerprint records, I don't have a problem with that. But the other ones, I mean, how are we supposed to make a determination on this if we don't know exactly what what the facts are?
This is Margaret Whalen, Mr. President, members of the board. We have been trying to disclose if the doctor has submitted any documentation or a written explanation. They are required to submit a written explanation. So Ms. Hollins has been including that in the paperwork. It usually is towards the end of all the...
Did I not? Because I was going to say, I didn't see any written explanation other than when it shows up and it's going down when you're going through the normal stuff. And it'll say, you know, no, not complete. And then the one of them said, you know, all the charges were dropped after I did my program. And another one I saw underage drinking. But I didn't see any, unless I missed it. Did anyone else see any written correspondence?
There's nothing on this one. Dr. Phelps is just minor in possession of alcohol.
Right.
And there's
okay,
no...
that was the one with, okay. If that's what it was.
Yeah, Ms. Hollins had stated that she put the reports at the very end, but I apologize if they're not there. We will definitely make sure to get all the information to you in the future.
But on this one, going forward, we can definitely do that. But if it was minor in possession and there's nothing else going on, I mean, and everything else checks out okay, I don't have a problem.
Well, that's just it. Both of the reports... excuse me, came back negative, so you wouldn't see anything other than the negative mark.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but the other one, but this one, this is underage drinking.
Yes.
And so I can say, okay, that was a long time ago. He was a kid. It was nothing's on his record, and I could approve that. I don't know what the second one is, which we could talk about when we get the next item. But as far as this one goes. Does anyone have a problem issuing a license?
No.
If anything else came back okay? Okay.
No problem here.
So let's make a motion to...
this is Dr. Jones. I make a motion to accept Dr. Derek Phelps as a license in the board, or as license in the state of Arizona.
That's right.
Okay. Okay,
second.
There's a motion.
Dr. Moffitt.
There, then a second. Seconded by Dr. Moffitt. Any discussion? Okay. I'm so used to saying all those in favor. And I gotta, Dr. Jones?
Aye.
Dr. Moffitt?
Aye.
Dr. Hunter?
Aye.
Dr. Mastouras?
Ooh.
Aye.
And I vote, sorry to wake you up, and I vote aye also. It's unanimous. For Dr. Phelps. Item H, review, discussion, and possible action on pending endorsement application for Dr. Valdez. Now, do we know what his...
Mr. President, members of the board, this is Margaret Whalen. Ms. Hollins and I reviewed this application together. We were having some challenges with this particular doctor, his education, he had taken the orals courses later after graduation. We had several discussions. He's coming from the state of Florida, which we do not endorse currently because they don't have scope that is equal or higher to Arizona. He just kind of gave a soft refusal, if you will, to get the SELMO certificate because he felt that the additional coursework of the pharmacology as part of the 120 hours should have sufficed. So because I am an administrator, Paula and I are both administrators, we're not decision makers on this board, I said I will put it before the board, they can take a look at it. However, our law is very clear and concise that they have to also be coming from a state that has an equal or higher scope. So you can make a decision based on that information. I think this doctor does meet the requirements, it's just unfortunate that he's coming from a state that doesn't have the scope of practice to meet our requirements. I think if this doctor went back and got the SELMO certificate, which we accept, the board could easily license him at that time by endorsement.
Margaret, this is Dr. Moffitt. What was that certificate that you were asking for pharmaceutical licensure?
It's called CELMO, C-E-L-M-O. It's an acronym. It's Council for Endorsed Licensure Mobility for Optometrists. It's through the Association of Regulatory Boards of Optometry. I believe in 2007, Arizona voted to accept that as a vehicle for doctors who are coming from states that don't have an equal or higher scope. It's additional it's CEE, so it's continuing ed that's tested. So it's sort of like coursework. Mm-hmm. It's not just regular CE. And I believe the doctor has to get 50 hours or something like that, and they have to, it's a combination of their education and the coursework for the certificate through ARBO. And so if a doctor...
50 hours, huh?
I think it's 50. I apologize. I just looked at it the other day, too, and I swear I was going to remember. But but it's a course that's easily available. I think it's online, so a doctor could finish it in 1 to 2 weekends. So it's not a super labor-intensive, where we're asking them to go back and take the national boards or anything like that. That would be the only other option for this doctor, to be honest. If he didn't want to get the CELMO certificate, he would have to have the national boards within the last 10 years and apply as a regular applicant. So.
Yeah.
With the additional education, just as an aside, I don't doubt this doctor is qualified. It is simply the way our law is written.
Then we don't have much of an option, do we?
Not really, but like I said, sometimes people want to hear from
you. By that, and they're I know, it's not your decision to make. But as I listen to it, it's not like we can say, well, he's a nice guy, he has the education.
Right.
I mean, it specifically states you're from a state that doesn't have the same scope as us, so we need this in order to verify. Basically, would his objections to CELMO be number one, to taking the test, and number two, for paying to take the test? Is that the negative?
I think he feels it would be redundant for him to do it since he already took the additional coursework in the state of Florida.
Right.
And P.S., he is a very nice guy, so it's not even about that either. We've had several conversations and we've tried to work with him, and Florida's just one of those states. There's a few East Coast states that still have strong ophthalmology representation, and so they don't have any orals or any other higher scope like we have.
Yeah.
So even though he took the education,
it's not like it's going to hurt him.
Right.
Where he's coming from, the scope of practice is lower than ours.
Yes.
So somehow he has to show that he has, I'm trying to talk to the public now, so we're trying to show that he has the ability to do this, because of the state that he's in now, it doesn't require that. He took the courses, but who knows when.
Correct.
So we're just asking him to review. Okay.
Right.
And
so
again, I don't think...
safely practice in Arizona at our scope of practice, utilizing all
right.
the topical and orals that we have.
And he's a nice guy and everything else, like you said, so it's, it's a little harder to make the decision because he's not being a jerk to you. But nonetheless, we don't have a leg to stand on.
Correct. I believe that to be true.
Okay.
Does that help?
And this is Mona Baskin. I would concur.
Thank you. Good. So I'd like to entertain a motion for what we just discussed.
This is Dr. Jones.
So this is,
I make a
we lost you.
I have to go fast to get on here. This is Dr. I make a motion to deny this application for Dr. Valdez until he completes the CELMO certification.
This is Margaret.
Or whatever other options he has.
Before there's a second to Dr. Chris Hagas, may I speak?
Pardon me? Yes.
This is Margaret. Yeah. May I speak before there's a second to that motion?
Yes, go ahead.
Dr. Jones, a denial is an official action. It's reportable to the National Practitioner Data Bank. I'm not sure if your intent is to flat out deny or if you just want to
put it older. What do you think?
I think the board could just state that he needs to get the CELMO certificate in order to be considered for licensure by endorsement. It wouldn't really be a motion.
But you said there are other. You also said there are other options, though, not just CELMO.
No, Dr. Casagas, members of the board, if I could just point you to the rule that we're speaking of, and it's AACR 421202. It's section C. It says, in addition to complying with subsection B, an applicant for licensure by endorsement shall submit the following information. And then if you go to number four, it states that if the applicant does not meet the requirements listed in the prior rule, 201 and 202, meaning that they're not at the board's scope, a current certificate issued by the SELMO or its successor organization. So it's pretty specific that that certificate is required when they're not meeting the scope or higher.
Well, I thought you said there was a couple ways he could do it, Margaret. One of them was going back and taking the boards.
Yes, this is Margaret Whalen, Mr. President. That's true. So the other option would be for the doctor to go back and take whatever parts of the national boards are outside of the 10-year time frame that we have currently. So it would be if he took them prior to 2010, which I believe he has taken them prior to that. So it is an option, but it's not a good one, I think. I don't know anyone that wants to go back and take
them. Right, but we don't want to – but we could say you need to do one of the options that are – an option that's available to you in order to do that.
I think Dr. Jones, you could make a motion that says, you would be required to submit the SELMO certificate for licensure by endorsement in Arizona. I think that would be appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, well, is this putting him on hold? This is Dr. Jones. Is this just putting him on hold? Will he be on our agenda every month until? Because if we don't make a motion, we just say under recommendation, you need to have this.
Right.
Done
actually, before. This is Margaret Whalen. It actually would still remain a deficiency, and so if the board does nothing, they don't have to accept the application today. The conversation or the discussion will be noted in the minutes, and staff will let him know, that the board did, have a discussion about it, and he really needs to meet the requirement of the law, and that is the SELMO certificate. That leaves the decision open to
you
the
pursuant, pursuant to whatever that number is. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Dr. Krasagas?
And I would say...
So I'm going to say you could put on there that pursuant to ARS, whatever.
Oh, yes, yes, definitely.
That Mona said that the board said that this is, this is what we have to live by.
Okay.
Okay. Now, Dr. Jones.
Okay. Well, I take
motion.
Back the denial, and then we recommend that he gets this done, and we'll let him know. I don't know what else you want me to know to say.
This is Margaret Whalen. That's fine, Dr. Jones, because then what will happen is, barring any results from fingerprints that require it to come back before the board, once he meets the requirements, it would actually fall under my purview, and I would be able to accept the application for licensure under the director's authority.
So basically the motion is just to allow staff to do their thing.
Direction to staff,
contact the patient.
Sagas.
Yeah, it's the direction to staff
yes.
to... quote unquote, handle it.
That's fine. I don't think we need a motion.
Right.
If Ms. Baskin disagrees or agrees, she can let us know. But I think it's fine if you just direct staff to inform the doctor he has to meet the requirement of the law.
Perfect.
Right.
And if we
Dr.
can do that.
Kasagas, Dr. Kasagas, members of the board, Ms. Whalen, yes, I would concur that basically what you're doing at this time is you're tabling the decision regarding licensure at this time until he meets all the qualifications, including presenting a SELMO certificate pursuant to AAC R4-21-202-C4. And I think at that time, then the message is sent to the doctor to let him know what he needs to do so that he can complete the application and licensure process here in Arizona. Thank you.
Okay.
Done.
Sounds good. So you have your directive?
Yes, thank you.
No problem. Okay. Item I, review discussion of possible vote on pharmaceutical agent certificate application. Christopher Shodo, OD.
Mr. Margaret. President, members of the board, this is Margaret Whalen. So as you know, in 2001, we had our orals and doctors were grandfathered in. So we do have a select few that don't have the pharmaceutical agents. So Dr. Chiodo is a licensed Arizona optometrist prior to 2001, and he's now applying for the PA certificate. So all the documentation was provided. The application was filled out by him. The 120-hour course of study was verified by his College of Optometry. He submitted the CPR that's required. So if you feel that the coursework submitted met the requirement, then we can issue the PA number, the agent, the certificate.
Got it. Did anyone see a problem with the application, the education?
No.
I can't remember. What school was that? I don't have it right here in front of me.
Yeah.
You remember, Margaret?
Division centers.
I apologize. I don't have it in front of me. I thought I did. Oh, wait. Yes, I do. Sorry. Illinois College of Optometry.
Okay. I think Vision Centers is where he works. Is this a motion? Or is this just allowing you to, again, giving you direction to go ahead and do it, or do we have to...
Oh, no, I need a motion for this. This is an official action by the board because I don't have authority to do it, just the PA.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
This is Dr. Moffitt. I'll make a motion to grant the PA license to Dr. Christopher Chiodo.
Perfect.
Okay.
Is there a second?
This is Dr. Jones. I'll second it.
Okay.